You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Steve King, and we're here today with Congressman Steve Buyer of Indiana, who represents 12 counties in West Central Indiana, and also is a ranking member on the House Veterans Affairs Committee. There's so much more in the history and the background of Stephen Buyer as I sat and watched the Congress operate in the years when, before I ever ran for the Iowa Senate or was involved in public life, I saw Steve Buyer front and center in the public stage. And as I've watched him walk through his career here in Congress, I didn't have a full appreciation of the educational background, the service background, and the foundation that you've lent to this task here in this Congress. Welcome to Conversation with Congressman King, Congressman Steve Buyer. Glad to All have right. you here with us.
Thank you.
And as I look through this, it looks to me that you grew up on the banks of the Tippecanoe River, and I grew
did.
Up on the banks of the Buyer River.
Just the what?
The Buyer River.
Spell it.
B-O-Y-E-R.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's close. And
this could be some relatives.
they might have explored further
our
west.
Name, our name, it's spelled B-U-Y-E-R.
Yes.
I'm pronounced Buyer, but it was our ancestry came from Alsace-Lorraine along the Rhine. Huh. And it was Debouillet. So some of the Boyers was also Boyer. And so there could be some ancestry. Like many Americans, as our ancestors immigrated, when they went through the lines, they would say, okay, what's your name? And whoever wrote it down, they would write it phonetically.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of names got butchered.
And some of those
hard,
people
hard to butcher King, but
I think it went from well, I did it. That was actually
wow, so you may be on a river, an ancestor of mine.
It could be the French connection going on
the
here
French
between
connection.
Indiana and Iowa. And,
well, yeah.
In any way we can strengthen that connection too. And I've watched your career, and I want to first say thank you for your service to our country. It goes a long ways back, and your degree at the Citadel would be that military foundation that started you down this path. Could you talk a little bit about the path that got you into the Citadel and what inspired you to go there, and then as things unfolded in your career after that, Congressman Buyer?
I come from a family that has a pretty steep military tradition. As we trace our family tree, it goes all the way back to Nathaniel Greene in the American Revolution. And my middle name is Earl, E-A-R-L-E, which of the many Earls are in Virginia. So, it goes from the Revolution, the War of 1812, goes up, relatives of mine fought in the Civil War. And then we missed the Mexican-American War, and we missed the Spanish-American War. But my grandfather in World War I, my father served during Korea. My brother and I weren't old enough to go to Vietnam, and my brother and I went to the Citadel. We followed our father's footsteps to the Citadel, and my brother right now is a colonel in the Army and is serving in Baghdad as we speak, and I am a colonel in the Army Reserves, having served on and off of active duty. So I'm pleased when I look back. I was 16 years old as a senior in high school, and I brought home an application to Indiana University. And that conversation with my father didn't go well. And now I'm now a graduate of the Citadel. And it was the right thing for me. I mean, what do you know when you're 16? It laid a good foundation for me. The Citadel, along with the other military colleges, there are six of them, not counting the academies. And so our academies and our six military colleges teach principled-oriented leadership, and I think that's pretty important. And so it helps me here in Washington. Voting becomes very easy for me because I'm principled-oriented in how I come to judgment. And you and I we watch some of our colleagues' pain because they walk in and try to make political judgments and political votes, and that's not necessarily a good thing to do.
I had a lobbyist explain that to me once, actually from Iowa, and he pointed out that the most agonizing thing for him was to try to discuss policy and issues with people that were in the middle of the political spectrum, because those on the right and those on the left had principles that they believed in, certainly diametrically opposed principles, but they were able to make decisions because they'd already drew conclusions about many of the foundational beliefs. But those in the middle have to start the equation all over again and make a new decision on every question because they don't have that foundation. And I can clearly see that foundation, and not only in your work here in Congress, but in your life preceding it and concurrent with it.
Well, those who walk the center line politically kind of remind me of that possum you end up seeing in the middle of the road.
Yes, that's where you get run over.
That's right.
And you've done some things to really be helpful with the veterans. And as we look forward here to Memorial Day and the celebration and the honor and the respect that we bring can come out to do, your work on the behalf of veterans has left a real distinct mark here in the public policy across the United States. And I wonder if you could talk about some of those highlights in your time.
Well, when I came to the Congress here in 1992, I was 32 years old. I came right off having served the country in the first Gulf War. I had lost a friend in our unit was killed, and it left a real impression upon me at a young age, and I wanted to serve the country in another capacity. So I came to Congress. I served on the Veterans Affairs Committee, where I have for the last 15 years, and at the time I also had served on the Armed Services Committee. So I would work on the personnel issues on armed services, and I would then deal with the issues of how we care for our veterans. And I do know that I get accused of being pugnacious at times and have a very strong passion. The service that I give to my comrades, not only those who are presently wear the uniform, but those of whom have served in the past, including how we care for those of whom have fallen, is very important to me. And because I think it says a lot about a country by the individuals of whom we seek to honor, who we care for. And we in this country, in America, do so much and expend so much of our treasury. And you voted for a lot of these bills on how we care for our veterans. And so let me extend some appreciation to you for your support for many of these initiatives.
You're listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with Congressman Stephen Breuer, who is a ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, a veteran himself, in fact, on reserve duty as a colonel. And the leadership that you provided, I could go back through some of these. One of them would be the gap in funding on VA hospitals, about $1.something billion that you were able to accelerate.
Billion. Yeah.
That was a momentous time here in this Congress. But in the time that we have, though, I'm curious about where you stand on the issue that has been brought up continually about Walter Reed Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I draw a distinction between our veterans' hospitals and Walter Reed, Bethesda, and the other, say, Landstuhl and those. What have you seen there? What's your judgment? And did we make the proper corrections?
Well, I'm glad you made the distinction because... What occurred at Walter Reed, and Walter Reed is a Department of Defense military medical treatment facility. It is not a veterans facility, and we don't treat veterans at that facility. We treat these are Army active duty soldiers and reservists, National Guardsmen. Now, you could have we've got a couple of VA employees there with regard to counselors, and you could have some military retirees may show up at the pharmacy. But, you know, when what had happened at Walter Reed is you've got some individuals of whom many of these soldiers were receiving their subacute care. And I would say that in our entire chain of medical mercy, subacute care has always been the greatest challenge, not only in the military health delivery system, but also in our private health system. And it's the follow-on care. That's what subacute is. And someone had made a decision that rather than let these soldiers stay in hotels and places out in the surrounding areas here of Washington, D.C., let's keep them in close proximity to their care. And so while that was well intended, they put them in an unhealthy building, and that was not a good judgment. But with regard to the health care that they were receiving is quality care. But what happened was that the fact that they were put in an unhealthy building was exploited by some in the political arena to play this theme that, well, the president took America to war under false pretense, and oh, by the way, you haven't been funding them, and you don't care for them when they come home. The anti-war advocates have been using this theme against the president, and so they use the Walter Reed to sort of feed that. So you're absolutely correct when you said that this is the difference between VA hospitals and Walter Reed and the level of care. Now, in the 1990s, I was part of this decision-making process whereby Bill Clinton told America, I'm going to give America a peace dividend. And so he reduced the size of our military by cutting the divisions in the Army and the Marine Corps, the wings in the Air Force, and the number of ships in the Navy. And when they did that, we had many forts and bases around the country that began to go through the closures. And we had many retirees that lived next to these military bases and forts to gain access to health care. As they began to close, they said, whoa, what about me? And at the same time, as dwindling dollars, I had to find out, how do I fund all of these hospitals and keep them at a level of medical military readiness for which I felt was acceptable? And I really couldn't do it with the dollars I had. So we ended up working with the administration, and we created three centers of excellence, one in Bethesda, Walter Reed, and Brook Army Hospital. So when Walter Reed came out on the latest BRAC, it really put the commanders at Walter Reed in a pretty tough judgment on how much money do I invest in the maintenance of a BRAC facility. Mm-hmm. Because Congress, GAO, and the OMB, everybody you come down on them if you're investing too much in a facility that's about to close.
And in fact, as I understand it, these facilities that were in subject were actually off campus, adjoining but not part of the Walter Reed facility itself.
Right, right.
And so, as I've seen this, and I think you've been to every hospital, I would expect
quite a few,
and you've seen the quality of care that's there.
America, let me just leave with this, Steve, is that America should have a good sense of comfort that we are the only nation in the world that has the level of investment that we make to care for a soldier, sailor, airman, marine when they go down. We have the very best when it comes to our medical logistics and in that entire chain of medical mercy that I mentioned. So when that soldier falls on the battlefield and they're wounded, we immediately bring in those dust-off helicopters at the Combat Support Hospital off the Longstuhl, from Longstuhl to Walter Reed or Bethesda or to Brook, and from there into perhaps one of our polytrauma centers in the VA. And the amount of America's treasury that we expend to care for that single life is greater than any other world or any other country here in the world. And so as we go into Memorial Day and we want to stop and pause, rightfully so, we think of those who've given so much for our freedoms that they should never, ever be taken for granted. And so Memorial Day isn't just for someone who may have died in combat or died in peace and while wearing the uniform. There are many, Steve, like your father, who served the country in World War II in the Navy, and the malaria that he had affected him for his life and cut his life short. And so Memorial Day is a day we pause and we turn to your father and along with others who served this nation to just say thank you.
And there's no possible way to say adequate enough thank you, but the simplicity of the way we express that is going to help us all. And I look forward to that day when we step forward and this nation pauses for the entire day to commemorate our fallen soldiers, those who fell in battle and those who fell later on, many because of the consequences of their service. And we see it here in this Congress on a daily basis. Some of the people, POW, Sam Johnson here, and the list goes on. But my time in this Congress has let me have an opportunity to work with some of America's best and bravest patriots. You're one of them, Steve Boyer, and I appreciate you being with us here today.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.